Welcome to Classical Companion. I'm Diane Jones, and over these weeks and months, I'm chatting with artists and musicians throughout the region about the music they turn to in these strange and interesting times we are in. Today, I am speaking to Will Knuth. Will is a violinist. He's a Fulbright scholar. He's a professor of violin at Syracuse University. He's also one half of Duo Sonidos, and I'm so glad to have him with me today. Will, thank you so much for sharing some music with us today.
Thanks, Diane. This is actually my dream, getting to make mixtapes as part of my job.
Well, before we start talking about the music, let me just check in with you. I'm checking in with everybody. How are you doing? You've had to make some adjustments as you had to go to online, and how is everything working out with you?
As with everybody, there's adjustments that have had to be made, and online teaching surprisingly works okay for private instruction. There's a learning curve, of course, and we were all thrown into it rather quickly by no fault of anybody's. But I think that, you know, there's very positive things that have come out of all of this, and I'm a true optimist at heart, so I like to see things that way and find those outcomes. But everything's chugging along.
Well, SU is done for the semester as well. So what are you looking toward over the summer months? Because, you know, normally this would be when you would be running around and performing in concert.
Right. So, I mean, obviously all concerts have been canceled for the foreseeable future. That includes a number that I had arranged. Something that we are working on is a simulcast. They're scrambling to try to get that together. I'm praying that it still works. Some things like that we're trying to salvage and still make happen on some level. Just, you know, live streamed and perhaps sharing the concert with different arts organizations who are all coming together, which is kind of a neat idea as well, getting these organizations and presenters from across the country sharing a concert that might have just been for one live audience.
That's outstanding. Yeah, there are some opportunities coming out of this that we may not have thought about previously. So we've got to look at that as a positive outcome as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's forcing everyone to be creative in ways that we haven't really needed to before. So if there's some things that linger as a positive result, this is the opportunity to make that happen.
I'd love to start talking about your music. Talk to me about your list as a whole. What were you kind of looking for when you were putting this list together? Because it's quite a varied list that you've given us.
Yeah, you'll see as it chugs along through the broadcast, it is varied. And I was really going, so when you asked me to do this, this was about a week ago, and a bunch of things have happened in the world since. And it has absolutely shaped the mood and atmosphere that I created with this list. I was trying to go for something very contemplative and introspective, and something that brought a sense of calm to the listener. And these are pieces that in their own various ways bring a sense of calm to me. In addition, I also tried to include things that meant something special to me, had some connection to me personally. So we can talk through that as we go, but generally I was looking for something more meditative and introspective and calming.
Well, let's start at the top of your list then, because you're starting your list with some Mozart. Talk to us about this first work.
So this set shows primarily because it's played by one of my favorite performers. Chris Bezuidenhout is, in my opinion, one of the contemporary masters of early music. I grew up with him in college. I've known him for a very long time, and it's just really exciting to see that he is really taking a place, I believe, a place in history as one of the genius masters of this genre. His influences have definitely rubbed off on my own interpretations. I just respect him, you know, to the moon and back. The fantasy is an example of a piece that you've all probably heard 100 times. But what I find so exciting about his playing is that when you listen to his performances and his recordings, you feel like you're hearing these pieces for the first time. This fantasy is an example of that. And what I also think is really interesting about this recording is he recorded it in its original version, which is missing an ending. Whether Mozart didn't finish it or it was the final edit was lost, I'm not completely sure. I'm not sure anybody is, but Chris has recorded it on this album in its original form, which is missing the ending.
Well, let's take a listen. Christian Bezuidenhout with Mozart's Fantasy in D minor, Kircher listing 397. You're right, Christian is just an amazing, amazing performer.
Yeah, he's just incredible. And if you're not familiar with the forte piano, he is definitely the person to explore it with. It's just really very fresh, very exciting. And you can very much allow yourself to believe that you're listening to Mozart himself play this as a young, exuberant guy.
You've got some more early music for us as well. Talk to us about this chaconne.
This is a piece that I actually was not familiar with until this recording came out by Rachel Podger. Rachel's a British violinist, Baroque violinist, early music expert. She teaches in London and has recorded practically all of the staple Baroque violin pieces. And this album's called Perle Baroque, and this piece just exuberates joy. You can't help but just feel joy just burst from within. It's really just masterfully handled, and her counterparts here are equally as talented. Danielle and Marcin, they're just wonderful players. And my whole point of putting these two specific examples of Baroque music on here is to show how exciting it is. Baroque, I say this often in my teaching, Baroque music was the rock music of the time. And to handle it carefully, I think, is missing the whole point of the music. It's meant to be exciting. And this, both the fantasy that you just heard by Chris and this chaconne by Bertaldi, these are performances that just highlight this sense of excitement.
Here is Antonio Bertaldi's Chaconne. You about Baroque music. I think we do it a disservice to kind of put it up on this untouchable pedestal.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, so many of the subito dynamics, all of the ability to add in your own ornamentation, it makes it really exciting. if you're treating these pieces in the way that they should be, there's just a world of interpretation available to make them exciting for every single performance, even more so, I think, than many composed pieces. There's a lot of freedom to really make it something of your own and add your own stamp to it.
Now, the next piece is definitely not Baroque.
No, it's not. And this is where, when I was sending you the list, as I was looking through some of these choices, I was thinking, this, Will, you're going out on a limb. This one's not going out on a limb. This is very standard, but it's definitely a shift from the Bertoli.
It's the Music for 18 Musicians by Steve Reich with Ensemble Signal. What is it that appeals to you about this piece?
I play with Signal all the time. It's a wonderful ensemble. It's a new music ensemble based in New York and at the Eastman School in Rochester, led by Brad Lubman, conductor, and Lauren Radnofsky, who's the artistic director. And this album, I mean, it's received a lot of praise in the press. And Steve Reich actually was in Buffalo working with the ensemble for the first performance that the group gave together. And I remember playing Tehillim. There may have been something else on that program, but that was my first experience with Ensemble Signal, and its first performance as a group was with Steve. And Steve has done a number of projects with the ensemble over the years, and he's always part of the recordings. And for example, we performed a U.S. premiere at UC Berkeley with Cal Arts of one of his pieces recently that was in the last couple of years that was co-commissioned by Ensemble Signal. There's a special relationship there, so I've definitely grown to feel that his music is, you know, something very important to me personally. But for this playlist, I chose it because there's nothing you can do other than meditate and go with what you're hearing. It's very minimal, and things are introduced one at a time. And the polyrhythms create this complex soundscape that you really just have to be in for the ride. I've chose just two tracks from this through composed piece that goes on, I believe, for about 45 minutes or so. So you'll have to bear with us if it sounds like it stops in the middle, because it does.
A little bit of the Music for 18 Musicians by Steve Reich with Ensemble Signal performing. I love Steve Reich, and I love that phase that comes just in the way he composes. And you're right, it is very minimal. It's sit and listen and be absorbed into the music as it unfolds.
Correct. And, you know, I do feel somewhat irresponsible presenting just a couple tracks from the CD. But to listen to the entire thing through, I think everybody should give it a shot at some point. It's very cathartic, and to hear the phasing and how it's works itself in and out and to the end is really just, it's so masterful. And there's a reason his music changed the course of things in the 20th century here in the States.
It really did. And we will make sure that we have a link to the full version so folks can go to the WCNY website and take a look at your complete playlist and listen to the full Music for 18 Musicians from there. Next, you have music of Caleb Burns. Talk to us about Remembrance.
So Caleb's another friend that I've known for years and years, and it's exciting to see how he's morphed into this powerhouse in the music world. I studied violin with him, and then he switched to viola and had been composing the whole time and always involved in new music. You know, he was one of the founding members of Alarmal Sounds. He plays an ensemble Signal. He's involved in everything and one of the staples in the New York new music scene. This piece he wrote for a mutual friend of ours, Yuki Numata, who's a violinist and also now a member of Alarmal Sounds. He based this piece on the first movement of the B minor partita for violin. And he said that he had previously written a piece for Yuki, and it was a little more rigid. This one, he wanted to allow her to have freedom of musicality and use the Bach as a base for the piece, but wanted to not literally use the movement as his reference, but composed the piece with the movement in mind. So he was afraid to quote too directly the Bach movement and wanted it to be his own. So he interpreted this composition style with his deep knowledge of the piece, but separately.
Here is Yuki Numata with Remembrance by Caleb Burns. You're talking throughout these about your very personal connection, and I think that's important when we're listening to these pieces, is to understand that situations and experiences are often what make pieces special to us. It's as much that as the music itself. Do you agree?
Yes, I absolutely do agree. And I've got to say, the last couple months, you know, we've all been locked down, and everybody's been dealing with a lot more personal time. And something that I found myself doing during that time was really becoming introspective and looking back and having time to process things in my past. And I just happened to be back in upstate New York where I grew up. So that also brings up a multitude of emotions and feelings and thoughts in its own. After so many years, to be back and to be presented with things that I knew very, very well and to see them now in a different light. That's kind of where I was going with picking these pieces and where I was going when I included these next two songs.
Talk to us about those next two songs from Goldfrapp.
I mean, as with the Baroque selections and Steve Reich and Caleb's music, I've been going for things that I feel are slightly genre bending. And these two pieces by Goldfrapp, if you're not familiar with the band, it's a British band made up of two primary performers and songwriters. It's Will Gregory, who's the composer, and Allison Goldfrapp, who co-composes the pieces with him. I played on their New York performances several years ago when they came for their tour with the album Tales of Us when it came out. And this first song, Joe, is a selection from that album. And you'll see it's very cinematic. There are mixed genre elements, electronics, live strings. You'll see that the words also have deep connection. And the way that I interpret my favorite pieces is the ones that become my favorite pieces are ones that I can eternally interpret differently. And this is an example of one where the next two songs where you can interpret the words very differently. For example, Jo, she based on remembering somebody from her past, and she's recollecting and recalling memories of that person. But generally the theme is you may have to run from things in your life, but don't run. You'll eventually catch your breath. The second song, Clowns, when we were rehearsing in the studios in New York, I remember thinking, this is one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard. I have no idea what she's saying, but it is incredibly gorgeous. I couldn't get it out of my head. I started to hear a few words, and I thought, you know, is she talking about what I think she's talking about? And what I've heard her discussing was augmentation, so breast augmentation. And as I went in to listen to the lyrics and to hear her thoughts on the piece, it was all about pressures in society to be something that we're not, and the silly things that people do to keep up with the pressures from outside sources. And for example, the words at the beginning of the piece are, only clowns would play with those balloons. What would I want to look like Barbie for? And when you hear those words with the piece, it creates this really ironic dichotomy. But I hope that you'll really enjoy the genius of its composition. It's just incredibly beautiful.
This is Jo and Clowns by Goldfrapp. Marvelous pieces, and I love how they just take it in a direction you're not anticipating, I guess.
Yes, exactly. And I think that's kind of the tongue-in-cheek property that the two of them put into, especially Clowns, is incorporating these thoughts that don't really match up with the beauty of what you're hearing. I mean, it is a beautiful thought to not give in to the pressures that are surrounding you, and to, you know, truly have the courage to be yourself and be happy with that.
Absolutely. Well, this next work is a little more traditional. Talk to us about the Gorecki.
So this piece, my mom had gone to Poland to visit my family there back in the 90s. And when she came back, she brought a stack of music that I had fun looking through, a bunch of very standard things and quite a few things that were a little more obscure that I was excited to see. One of the things that she brought back with her was a recording of the Third Symphony by Gorecki, which is titled The Symphony of Sorrowful Songs. The reason I was putting this on there is that it really expresses this deep, sorrowful pain and the sense. It was a prayer written on a cell of a concentration camp wall by a girl. And the way that he captures this deep, intense sorrow is just something that I had never heard before. My personal connection is that my grandmother and her brother were concentration camp survivors. And as a young boy growing up in upstate New York, you know, it's hard to imagine what they went through. They told the stories, and growing up comfortably in the countryside, it's really impossible to imagine what emotions they actually felt and what their experiences actually were. And I have to say, when I heard this piece, this is the first time that I could somehow feel that sense of dread and overwhelming fear and sorrow. I think also poignant for the time, we all have lost something of society in the last month. Something has definitely changed, and I think that we can feel a little sorrow for that. There's some innocence that has been lost the last couple months, and I think that everybody might find a little solace in something this emotionally raw.
Here is Goretzky's Symphony No. 3. You're right that music takes you to a place that words never could.
Yeah, absolutely. And it caught me by surprise when I heard it. I hadn't really known what to expect from the piece. I just put it on my CD player in my bedroom, and it really struck me by surprise to feel this flood of emotion open, you know, some of my own family's history that I hadn't really understood. It helps me to feel like I understood it a little closer. And I really do believe it is one of those undescribable feelings that I think music can really do a bit more justice to than trying to explain with words.
Absolutely. Well, you're going a very different direction with your next work. We're heading to music of Sheryl Crow.
So I'm a lover, just as with Goldfrapp, with Will Gregory and Alison Goldfrapp, I'm a lover of popular artists who write everything from start to finish themselves. And part of my love for those songwriters is that they put so much detail into the lyrics. And Sheryl Crow, especially in her earlier years in the 90s, really was a master lyricist in addition to, you know, music composer. What I find so beautiful about this song specifically is that she's discussing this idea that rivers are wide and deep and wind, and they take you on a ride, and you have to be prepared for what they will present you, just kind of at the end, leaving you with the idea that, you know, don't bail on me, honey, don't bail on me, meaning whatever happens, you know, there's light at the end. And if we don't give up, we can help each other get through it.
This is Sheryl Crow with Riverwide. I'm with you. I'm a Sheryl Crow fan as well.
Yeah, she's always been a favorite. And the reason I like these lyrics so much is because you can interpret them differently every time you hear them. I believe that she's intentionally ambiguous in some of her lyrics to allow the listener to make it more personal and accept their own personal interpretation of it. And I appreciate that for sure.
Well, next is something more familiar for classical music fans from Aaron Copland. This is a little bit from the Red Pony Suite. Talk to us about The Gift.
So this, I had originally wanted to put Appalachian Spring on here, which is one of my all-time favorite pieces of music. And it was just too long. And I was trying to think of something from Copeland that I could include here. And structurally, this actually kind of encapsulates a miniature version of Appalachian Spring in its style. This was a suite that I hadn't really been familiar with until I was sitting in traffic in New York City in a taxi cab, and it came on the radio. And I knew it was Copeland, but I had never heard it, and that got me excited because I had thought that I had listened to everything he had written. So thank you, anonymous taxi driver, for for exposing me to this great piece. There's something very refreshing and settling and centering about this music, and I think that will translate without words.
Here's the Buffalo Philharmonic with music of Aaron Copland, The Gift from the Red Pony Suite. I love that you came across that in a cab. These surprising ways we find music.
That's right. The taxi cab driver must have thought I was crazy. I bombarded him with questions and was excited to hear it. And he seemed a little confused by me. But whoever you are, thank you.
You know, that's half the fun. We've got to leave folks guessing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, these next two works... a little bit of bossa from Brazil.
That is correct. So when I grew up, my grandmother had a record player and a whole stack of records. And one of them had a picture of Rio de Janeiro and Copacabana Beach. And I remember listening to the songs on there. I think it was, it may have been that super famous Elis Regina recording with Jobim, Elise and Tom. It may have been that recording, but I just remember listening to this music, listening to the bossa nova, looking at the painting on the cover, and just have dreaming up this image of what Rio is like. And when I went to Brazil the first time to visit family, I remember walking down Copacabana Beach and hearing a bossa nova band playing and having this cathartic moment where I had been here before. Everything I imagined from that record, listening to that record as a child in the countryside, prepared me for seeing this in real life. And I think that's really powerful. And bossa nova is so particular to Brazil that I think it was especially able to capture that atmospheric charm that I was overwhelmed with walking on the beach there. These two selections are sung by Silvia Telles, who is one of the bossa nova masters singers, and Jinji was her nickname. These are just two of my favorite pieces. If you don't feel like you're in Rio listening to the second song entitled Rio, then give it a listen again and pour yourself a caipirinha.
E bandas de nuvens que passam ligeiras, para onde elas vão? Ai, eu não sei, não sei. E o vento que fala
you're not going to mistake this for anything except Brazilian music. And I'm right there with you with the caipirinha. We can both sit back and enjoy those.
That's right. It's a little early in the day, but I won't tell anybody, Dan. It's fine.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere. We'll do that one. Well, next we have your music.
So these are two pieces that were written separately but published together as one set. They're called Dawn and Wild Dance by Karl Szymanowski, written together with the incredible violinist Paweł Kochanski, the Polish violinist Paweł Kochanski, who Szymanowski co-wrote all of his violin works, his sonata, the myths, both of his violin concerti he wrote with Kochanski at his side. These pieces, I think, really capture, if we're talking about cultural musical references, Szymanowski very much set these in the folk style of Poland. He used a lot of idioms from the Tatra Mountains, the countryside, polyphonic elements from folk music where instruments had been used and played out of tune, but he loved and appreciated it and found so beautiful. Dawn absolutely gives us a sense of this awakening, and the Wild Dance just really encapsulates all of these folk dance elements of the Polish countryside. I think you will enjoy it.
This is Duo Sonidos with Dawn and Wild Dance of Karl Szymanowski. I had the chance to hear you and Adam perform this live, and you just play it so well. It's so much fun to listen to, Wild Dance and Dawn.
Thanks.
With Duo Sonidos. That brings us to just about the end of your list, though. We have one more work on this list. Talk about this work.
So Wojciech Kilar, he's another composer that I found out about through my mom's hunting and gathering adventure for music in Poland when she was there on that trip I referenced earlier. And I hadn't realized that I had already heard music of Wojciech Kilar. He's a film composer and was very instrumental in the films of Roman Polanski. And Francis Ford Coppola, for example, used him as the film composer for Dracula, Bram Stoker's Dracula. The Pianist, the movie The Pianist, also was his score. But anyway, he's a film composer and classical composer, just as many 20th century composers took that role. And this music, I think, really captures the Polish spirit over the centuries. This feeling that things are out of control and get ripped apart from different sides, but there's this Polish spirit that comes together and unites in the end to remain, you know, this Polish spirit remains. And I think that's kind of an idea that we can think of today at this moment in time. You'll hear listening to this piece, it's also minimalist, it's canonic in style. And as the theme gets repeated and broken and segmented, it layers on top of each other and creates at the climax this cacophonous mass of sound, only to at the end come together and with the main theme all in unison and ends with the orchestra shouting out together with their own voices, not their instruments. I think this is a beautiful metaphor for coming back together through all of this chaos that surrounds us and uniting for something and as one unified voice.
Let's listen as we've come together in one unified voice. Music of Wojciech Kilar, Orawa. With you, that's so powerful to have that at the end, that one unified voice of the orchestra, that literal voice of the orchestra.
Yeah, I agree, and it's fairly rare to hear this. I heard it once with the Polish Radio Symphony, actually at Hamilton College when they came to play. This was years ago, and they played this piece, and I remember being so excited because I actually had a recording of them playing the piece, and I had never heard it played live before. But yes, at the end, just that final line, you hear the instruments all come together with that theme together and then join in shared voices. That's my interpretation. Take it as you will, but let's go with that for the time being.
We will definitely go with that. Well, that's just about all the time we have. Will, before I let you go, I want to give you a chance to leave us with any last thoughts if you would like.
Well, yeah, so as I mentioned, the last couple months have opened up this world of contemplation and exploring old memories for me personally. And I'm sure that many of you have dealt with the same thing, being stuck at home and dealing with a world that has very suddenly changed and temporarily isolated us all. And music, as at any time, is a way to explore our own feelings and to make something warm and comforting that can aid us through the moments we're dealing with. And I have to say, by you asking me to do this list, it really allowed me to go through my own musical past and listen to things that I hadn't listened to in a long time, which brings up their own memories, and it creates a cycle that I think is actually very soothing and healing. So I encourage you all to make your own playlist and make your own classical companion to help you through whatever you're dealing with personally at this moment.
Indeed, I encourage you to do so as well. Once again, I've been speaking to Will Knuth. He is a marvelous violinist. He's a Fulbright scholar. He's a professor at Syracuse University teaching violin, and he is also one half of Duo Sonidos. Will, thank you once again for sharing your music with us and sharing your stories with us.
Thanks, Diane. This was great. I like your project. This is wonderful.
Oh, thank you.